Robert Harris's latest thriller, The Fear Index, imagines a Geneva-based hedge fund which uses a computer algorithm to predict the movements of the stock market based on fear. It's an inside look at the high-stakes world of trading, but also a cautionary tale of what could happen in our increasingly technology-driven financial markets. It's just Knopf, and I'm very pleased it has brought Mr. Harris to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Now, your previous novels have been historical or political, set in the Nazi era, ancient Rome, or in the case of your last book, The Ghost, that was modern-day British politics. Why did you want to write a novel about stock traders, and why did you set it in Geneva?
Well, as you say, in a way, my subject is power, I suppose much of modern-day power is in the financial markets. I think that drew me to it. The whole project started about 12 years ago. I wanted to do a kind of new version of Orwell's 1984, and I thought that the threat to the liberty of the individual was no longer the state, but was a private corporation using new technology, computer technology. And that's, I started to get interested in that area. It's taken a long time for the book to find its form, but when it did, I felt that it I should write about the use of technology by financial institutions, and I went to look at a hedge fund in London, and they were relocating to Geneva.
Ah.
And the moment they told me that, I was suddenly much more interested, because I don't really want to write a novel set in Wall Street or the City of London. But Geneva, with all its associations with the Gothic and Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, that unlocked the book for me at last.
And Frankenstein is a part of the mood of this book. I don't want to go into too much detail because I don't want to spoil the plot. But let's start with your title, The Fear Index. Isn't it the nickname for a real stock index?
Yes. It was sort of manna from heaven for a novelist, really. As I worked more and more on this area, which is not something I was an expert in, I came across this thing called the VIX. And the VIX is the Volatility Index that's run by from Chicago. And it measures implied volatility over the next 30 days in the stock market. It's calculated mathematically on how much people are hedging. And the traders call it the Fear Index because essentially it measures anxiety and nervousness.
And how accurate is it?
Well,
I mean, you can't predict a Black Tuesday or something like that.
No, it can't. It's really more. It's less of a predictor, actually. It's more like a kind of thermometer or barometer. It tells you at that moment how nervous people are getting. And when the stock market really goes into a dive, you see the VIX really rocketing up 30-40%.
And you've chosen a real day. The story takes place on May 6, 2010. When there was an unusual event in the financial markets?
Yes, the so-called flash crash. I mean, I'd started writing the novel, and I wanted to have a novel about an algorithmic hedge fund and something going wrong with the algorithm and there being a big stock market crash. And I was trying to think how I could do this. How could I think up such a thing? And I turned on the news. It was, oddly enough, it was the election night in Britain when David Cameron came to power, and I looked, and suddenly the whole stock market in America was collapsing.
David Cameron, although it could have.
No, quite. The Dow went down 1,000 points, and most of it in the course of about 5 or 6 minutes, and I realized that here, actually, was the real-life event, and so I set my novel on that day.
Was it caused by computer trading?
Yes.
Is your novel something of an explanation of what might have caused that? Because a number of reviewers have mentioned that your book explains the workings of hedge funds in an especially clear way.
Well, that's because I was completely ignorant of hedge funds. And all my novels, you know, Pompeii, which is about a guy who runs an aqueduct in ancient Rome, or Enigma, about a codebreaker at Bletchley Park, I like to try and understand what the people are doing physically, what is their day. And so I really set out to to say, what does a hedge fund do? Well, we're always hearing this about hedge funds, but what is a hedge fund? And what does a guy who runs a hedge fund, what does he get up to? So that's why the reviewers have said that it explains it clearly, and that's because I had to explain it to myself.
So you had to do a lot of research, both in stock trading, in mathematics, in science, because your protagonist, Alex Hoffman, is an American physicist who went to Geneva to work at CERN and then wound up starting a hedge fund.
Yes. Well, this is what's happened. I mean, over the last 20 years, the financial markets have come increasingly under the sway of physicists and mathematicians. They're called quants in the jargon of the business, which stands for quantitative analysis. And essentially, they have taken over the world. Three-quarters of the stocks traded in New York are now traded by computers, by machine. And an amazing statistic, the average length of time that an American share is held is 22 seconds as a result of computer trading, as a result of physicists in the stock market.
Well, how much money can be made in 22 seconds?
Oh, enormous fortunes can be made in 22 milliseconds. And one of the attractions of writing about the flash crash was to actually describe millisecond by millisecond the way in which the stock market now operates.
So are people who thought that they would go into other fields, in the case of Alex Hoffman, he thought that he would work on an American collider, and that fell through. Do they see the stock market as an alternative career path?
Yes. In 1993, Congress saved $10 billion by canceling what was called the Desertron, which was going to employ 2,000 people accelerating particles around an underground tunnel the size of the Washington Beltway. And it wiped out the career prospects, really, for a generation of American physicists. And it was around that time that a lot of them started to go into Wall Street and devise all those wonderful derivatives that have proved so successful. And Congress saved the U.S. taxpayer $10 billion and ended up paying $3.7 trillion to clear up the mess left behind by all these brilliant people who went into the stock market.
And then, of course, a lot of we're spending money to do the science in Switzerland anyway, in the CERN collider, yeah, the Hadron Collider, because American scientists are going over there to work on that. My guest is Robert Harris, whose latest thriller is called The Fear Index. It's published by Knopp. How many of today's trades are being done by computers using sophisticated algorithms rather than by human beings?
Well, it's three-quarters of all trades on the New York Stock Exchange, roughly speaking, are now done by computer. That's really in two forms. There's high-frequency trading, in which really shares might be held for less than a second. Or there is algorithmic trading, which is perhaps more interesting and really is the focus of my book. And this is a computer will analyze previous movements on the stock market, select the stocks and trade them. And I watched this happen in Geneva.
Well, Dr. Hoffman's research is in the field of autonomous machine reasoning. Yes. So that's artificial intelligence, in effect?
Yes.
Are we having HAL now running our stock brokerage houses?
Well, it does in my novel. We were talking earlier about why I went to Geneva. Well, the hedge fund that was in London relocated to Geneva to avoid British rates of tax, but also because they could recruit scientists from the Large Hadron Collider to work in their fund. And they employ no one who doesn't have a PhD in sciences. They won't even employ someone with a degree in economics. Basically, the markets have become strings of data processed by computers, and all sorts of things these computers are programmed into them to make them decide what stocks to pick. And one of the things is human emotion,
because human emotion is what leads people to buy stuff and to sell stuff.
Exactly. Well, the idea is to predict what the stock market is going to do. And at a time when most people were losing money on the stock market, algorithmic funds, some of them were making enormous amounts of money because people were panicking. And as one of these quants said to me, we like it when people panic because our machines never panic. And people are predictable when they panic, and our machines can then predict what the market's going to do.
And in your book, Dr. Hoffman and his partner, Hugo Quarry, who's a banker, their hedge fund has been making a profit of 83% for its customers.
Yeah.
That sounds like even better than Bernie Madoff, and he had a Ponzi scheme to do it.
No, if you get it right, you can make an enormous amount of money. And these guys are they rich. There was one guy I took out to dinner to try and prize out the secrets of what he was up to. And as we sat down, I said, how are things going? And he said, oh, pretty well. We made $700 million on Thursday. I paid for the dinner, incidentally, at the end of it. But that's the sort of wealth that they can generate.
And Hoffman has become so enormously wealthy through his hedge fund that he estimates his assets as $1 billion or $1.2 billion. And yet he seems to be more interested in the research aspect of his program.
Well, that is
he's
something.
He's not giving the money away and not taking you to dinner.
No, the man I talked to wasn't the Hoffman figure. He was more of the Quarry figure. There is a division. The traders, the traditional bankers, the people you see in the Oliver Stone movie, they are very interested in money. A lot of the physicists, they're more interested in just seeing the science work, and they get a great deal of satisfaction out of doing that.
The story begins when Hoffman receives a rare first edition of a book called The Expression of the Emotions in Men Man and Animals, Charles Darwin's book, and it has special significance for him?
Well, his fund specializes in human terror. The algorithm scours the internet for incidences of fear-related words. And this book arrives, this is the opening of the novel, is that this book arrives in the post for him. And it's one of the great analyses of fear and emotion that Darwin did. It's the first book that actually had photographs in it. And they're rather ghoulish Victorian photographs of sort of elderly models having electric shocks applied to their faces, which gives them a sort of rictus of terror. And then it's described by Darwin, because Darwin believed that our faces were kind of windows onto our souls and our emotions. And we were like animals. We couldn't disguise what we felt.
And his writings about disgust, which were ignored until fairly recently, have suddenly become an area of a lot of research.
Yeah.
Darwin was always ahead of his time, it seems, except in some circles. A paper of any kind is banned in the hedge fund's offices, and yet Hoffman is a collector of rare books. So this is a bit of a contradiction, isn't it?
Well, for him, books are artifacts, antiques. One of the reasons I wanted to write this book, going back to what we were saying earlier, it was a book by Bill Gates called Business at the Speed of Thought, where he said that every company should become a digital nervous system, and there should be no paper in any office, there should be no inventory. A company should be a sort of digital entity, frictionless. And I thought this was such a wonderful idea, this kind of Frankenstein's monster of a company with its own nervous system, that idea is carried over into this novel. So Hoffman's hedge fund is pure Bill Gates nirvana of paperlessness and digitalization. Oh. And, of course, it all goes horribly wrong.
Well, you have epigraphs at the beginning of each chapter, and the first one is from Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. You also have Darwin. But the book begins with this book arriving, he has no idea who has sent it. That's almost like a traditional thriller opening.
Yeah. Well, I consciously, the moment that this book was unlocked for me by going to Geneva and by using the techniques of the Gothic novel, I very deliberately picked up on Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, written in Geneva, but also that whole tradition of Gothic literature, strong in America and in Britain. And the Gothic novel really is about the hinterland between human and the other, whether it's vampires or werewolves. And it seems to me that a modern Gothic novel is about the hinterland between the human and the digital machine.
So you've taken a very traditional genre,
yeah,
and you've put computers into it. The action takes us into the world of the very wealthy, but also into the slums and red light district of Geneva, and there's a definite cinematic quality to it. Your last novel, The Ghost, was made into a film, The Ghostwriter by Roman Polanski. Any talk about a film version of this one?
Yes, I think...
Stanley Kubrick sat around to do this.
It's very, very sad, but thankfully Paul Greengrass is, who did United 93 and the Bourne movies, and Paul is going to, I think, direct the movie of The Fear Index.
Robert Harris's latest novel is The Fear Index, and it is published by Knopp. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.